Wistful Thinking is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things movie and nostalgia podcasts, go to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
Welcome to Wistful Thinking, a podcast where we revisit favorite pieces of pop culture from our childhood to see if they're still as good all grown up. I'm Kara Gale-O'Regan, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Jordan Poland Clark.
Hello.
And we don't actually have a guest this week because we are warming up, we're getting ready for Halloween, and we decided to return to our roots as an almost Sandra Bullock podcast and watch Practical Magic from 1998, a movie that I remembered very fondly, but turned out to be much darker than I remembered. But before we get into that, Jordan has a special report from the past.
Ooh, the past. We never talk about that here. So, over the weekend, I went to see Hanson, like the band Hanson that everybody knew in 1997, like Bob Hanson. And Kara was like super pumped about it, for me to talk about it on this podcast. Because now that I think about it, that is kind of like a blast from the past for most people. But there's like a whole, like, really passionate group of people who never stopped listening to Hanson. And they go on tour every couple of years and still sell out every single show that they play. And it's amazing. They're still like, so I don't know, Kara, did you think that they were dreamy when we were, 12?
Well, I did always think that Isaac looks like a camel.
He cleaned up.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Zach was like pretty prepubescent and kind of weird looking. And then Taylor was like a pretty boy, but like, I don't know, confused me about gender and sexuality.
I also had that. But because I had a friend who looked exactly like Zach, and she's a girl, but I had the biggest crush on Zach, so that was weird. But I thought that they were super cute. I think that it was fun when we were young to like have a crush on somebody who like Zach was our age, so like that was fun, you know. But
well,
so,
yeah, because they're, super non-threatening.
Oh, yeah. They still are super non-threatening. They all, so they cleaned up nice. Taylor is still, like, pretty. He's the prettiest one. But, like, he is good looking. And, like, they can sing. Like, they're good. Man, I never stopped listening to them. I never stopped loving them. And they still play Mbop, like, at every show, which, like, is cool. You know, they do it different than they used to play it. Like, Taylor will play bongos for it. Like, they'll change it up. They'll do it acoustic, whatever. Like, can you imagine writing a song, like, when you were 12 and, like, having to sing it for the rest of your life?
Oh, God.
That's what I always think about.
That and they sell like a nightmare.
I mean, I can't believe how well they sell it, you know? But they do, like, I feel like they have this, like, very controlled image. Like, they're very, they all got married when they were, like, 18 years old. To fans? They all got married to fans.
That's really weird. That's like a big red flag to me.
I agree. I was just talking with my sister about this yesterday. I don't know how true this is, but if you like Google Isaac and his wife, like he says he like saw her in the crowd at a Hanson concert. Like that's so weird. Like you go to a Hanson concert and you're like, I was chosen.
I'm the chosen one.
But then that's like what everyone like secretly dreams of when they go to see like a band that they have a crush on. But like what would you do if it actually happens?
Oh God. I don't know. That's like too much.
I don't know. So they all like are, you know, got married super young. Like are very wholesome. Like they all have like a bunch of kids.
Are they Mormon?
No.
But they're like Mormon adjacent, aren't they? Like,
maybe. I don't know. They don't really talk about that. I think, like, they, like, maybe, but they also, like, tend to control their image really well and tend not to do anything that would be, like, a big turnoff for anybody. Which is, like, cool, because if they were talking about God all the time, I would probably like them a little less, depending on how they did it. I don't know. But it's also like I've seen them 4 or 5 times now. And it's like, you can just tell how polished it is. Like you can tell, like, they probably say, like, literally exactly the same thing every night. They don't, like, stray from their set list very much. Like, it's just, like, very polished and, like, very put together, which is nice. It's always a really good show, but also I wish they would, like, let loose a little bit. Like one time somebody was smoking pot in the crowd, and it was, like, during someone's smoking pot in the crowd at a Hanson concert.
Oh, my God. I need to meet that person. I have questions for them.
Yeah.
I have a lot of questions.
But so there's, like, parts of the show where they'll all come up to the front of the stage and, like, you know, do mostly acoustic, like, a cappella stuff. So that was a time when that was happening, and Zach was like, ooh, I smell that. I want to party with you guys. And, like, it was silly, but it was just, like, fun because I was like, oh, you didn't plan that. It was, like, maybe the one thing you guys are saying that you didn't plan.
Yeah.
So I liked that.
That sounds very off-brand, actually.
Yeah, but
not only is he admitting he knows what weed smells like, but also...
yeah, and here's the other thing that was really felt really off-brand, and I was like, whoa, what? Just like, so when the first time that Zach came out from behind the drums, because he's the drummer, so, you know, you see his face, and that's it, and he came out from behind the drums, and his pants were so tight, you could just, like, see his junk straight through his pants, and, like, it was just, like, it's a crowd of all girls, we all noticed, and it was just, like, shocking. Like, I was like, oh, I don't know if that's a thing that I wanted to happen. Can we undo this? I'm not ready. So that was also weird. And,
like... What year was that?
What?
The tight pants.
Oh, no, that was just incident. Now. That was 2 days ago.
Oh, that was
ago.
Last night?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, my.
So...
That's even worse. I think that's even worse because, like, the really tight pants on guys thing is, like, several years behind us by now.
They weren't, like, really tight. Maybe he just wasn't wearing underwear.
Oh, that's also a possibility.
They were tight enough. But so, and I noticed, like, some other things, like, being in the crowd. Like, one, like, the older that I get, the less patience I have for certain types of girl energy that existed in the crowd, which, like, made it a little bit less fun maybe than it used to be to go.
Yeah.
But also, like, so there's not very many men in the crowd at a Hanson show.
Really?
For obvious reasons, right? So, but, like, the first one I went to is in 2003, probably. And so I've been to one every few years since then. And this one, more than at any other show, it was, like, women who brought their husbands. Like, and I'm sure that in the past there was always, like, girls who brought boyfriends. You know, boyfriends get dragged. But, like, there were so many husbands there. And it was just like, oh, is this a thing now? Like, you go to stuff that's, like, kind of, you know, generally women-centric. And women drag their husbands.
I don't know about that, but I think it's the same crowd that has just aged into marriage now.
Right. Like, but I've never been at, like, an event where it was so illustrated in an unexpected way. You know, like, you go to a wedding or something and, yeah, everyone starts to show up with their husband. But, like, this was just a place where I had never thought about that before. And I was like, oh, like, this is a thing. So anyway... Hanson's great. Everyone go listen to Hanson. They still make good music. And they're pretty cool. Like, they, maybe cool is not the word for them, but they, got stuck in a war with their record label. I don't, like, totally remember all the details, but, like, in the early 2000s, like, basically they were on a record label, like, a big one, and they were having, they couldn't get any of their music released, and... And everyone was, like, abandoning them, and, like, it could have been over there, you know, after they made, like, 2 albums. And they were like, you know what? We're going to start our own record label. We're going to self-release everything. And that's what they did. And they've been incredibly successful from doing that.
That's wild. So they're still releasing new music.
Yeah.
And people are buying it?
I don't know. I don't... Who doesn't buy music anymore?
Yeah, I don't know. Is that a thing?
But they also, like, they have their shit together. They have, like, a fan club. Like, because their fans will do... Their fans are crazy. Like, I'm not a crazy Hanson fan. Like, I like them, and I'll go pretty far out of my way to see them every once in a while, and I listen to them a ton. But, like, I met girls in line. Oh, that's the other thing, is you also have to get online, like, 4 hours early to a Hanson show.
Why?
Because they're all GA, and if you want to see them.
I have no patience for concerts at all anymore.
Oh, see, I don't mind doing stuff like that for, like, a band that I really want to see. But so we met, my sister, and we met some girls in line who literally were going to, like, every show on the East Coast. Like, they were from New Hampshire and, like, Massachusetts, and we were in New York, so they were at the New York City show, they were going to the Boston show, they were going to Canada to see them. Like, wow. People do that for them.
So is Hanson the Grateful Dead of our generation?
No. No, but I wish they were.
There's still time. There's still time for Zach to get fat and die of a drug overdose, I guess.
Oh, I hope not.
Yeah, that was a really dark joke. I'm sorry.
No, it's not. Like, it's like, part of me, like, thinks it's really refreshing how, like, kind of, like, wholesome they are. Mm-hmm. And, like, positive and, like... But then there was, like, a couple of times during the show where I was, like... could have rolled my eyes. I was like, all right, I'm done with this. Like, quit your positivity. There was also a drunk girl. I'm assuming she was drunk. I don't know. But she was, like, heckling them. Like, who goes to a Hanson show to heckle them? She was, like, super angry. I think she probably thought she was being funny at the stuff that she was yelling at them. But, like, that was, like, one of the girl energies that I was like, no! Like, you do not get to yell in my ear about dumb stuff. Like, I'm trying to listen to them. So, anyway. Hanson, yay.
So, back to the topic at hand. The 1998... movie Practical Magic, starring my girl Sandy and Nicole Kidman and Diane Wiest and Stockard Channing, who is so good in this, and a very, very tiny Evan Rachel Wood, among other people. It's about two witch sisters, played by Sandy and Nicole, who were raised by their eccentric aunts in a small town and face close-minded prejudice and a curse which threatens to prevent them ever finding lasting love. It's also about domestic violence. It's got comedy, it's got drama, it's got romance, it's got horror, it's got the power of community and sisterhood and powerful women. You can see why I love this movie. Jordan, you do not feel the same way.
No. This is the first time that I saw this movie, and it's not that I didn't like it, it was fine, and I love all of the people in it, they're great. But, and there were some parts of it that I really liked, and also I cried, like, a bunch of times, so I must have felt something. But also there were, like, entire parts where I was like, wait, what? Like, no. Like, I just, like, couldn't get over some of the, I don't want to call them plot holes, because there weren't really any holes, but, like, something, a few things happened, like, very suddenly, it felt like. And then they just, like, explained it away. And I was like, what? I don't know.
Can you give us a specific example of this?
Well, when they made Sandra Bullock fall in love with her first husband.
Oh, yeah, that was a little.
It was so shockingly fast. And yeah. She didn't even question it. She just, like, saw this. Did she even see him in the street?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they, so, like, made eye contact or something.
I remember that he made eye contact with the aunts, but I couldn't remember if he made eye contact with her. Like, well, he flirted more with the aunts than he did with her in the street.
Yeah. Okay. I agree. That was a little rushed. Well, but I think we, like, So eventually, you know, her that husband dies, and then after that she's so brokenhearted, and then she realizes that the ants put a spell, a love spell on the two of them.
But
And
like,
that's why that happened.
would she seriously not have questioned that earlier? Like, because like, okay, so they meet, they make eyes at each other in the street and out in
Yeah.
town, and then she goes home, and
I
then
know.
literally like a music video, music starts to play, and she runs back out of her house. Like, how long after do you think that was?
I'm pretty sure it was like they just got home.
Oh, okay, to me it felt like longer. I felt like she like sat around for a couple of hours.
No, because she ran like directly back to where he was, and it seems like he had just finished crossing the street or something.
Was just like really sudden the way she like ran it. We're meant to believe that she's a smart person, like a very
Yeah.
smart person.
And very practical.
Yeah, so like she wouldn't question that. She would.
Love is crazy, man.
No.
In the service of the larger story, like you have to get her. So if we can back up a little bit, the movie opens with the aunts telling the two sisters this family history, their ancestor story. We also learn that their parents have died, their father dies somehow, and then their mother dies of a quote unquote broken heart, whatever that's supposed to mean. And so they go and live with their aunts, and then their aunts are telling them this ancestor story that they're descended from this witch who could not be hung, and she finds out that she's the witch finds out that she's pregnant, and I don't know, I forget exactly, but it's not that important. Somehow, this whole lineage of women is cursed, winds up cursed, that any man that they truly love will die. So, this like super rushed piece of the story where Sandra Bullock's character meets, well, they don't even really meet before she's like jumping on him and kissing, but
Right.
that's beside the point.
I wrote in my notes, what? Did I miss something?
No, you didn't miss anything. But you have to like go through it really quickly where like they get together, they get married, they have two kids, they're super sublimely happy,
Wait,
and
can I
then
ask a question about the two kids? I think wait, so hearing you tell all of this, it I think my general problem with this movie is that they tried to fit too much plot in
There is a lot going on.
it.
Yes.
Because there were other parts of it that were closer to the end, I think, so we'll talk about them later, that I like loved. Like were so powerful and so amazing for like women and like sisters and like all this, but
I love those parts too.
they just tried to fit too much other stuff in it.
Yeah. I looked at Rotten Tomatoes, and that was like the main complaint. There was a lot of also like gendered misogynist bullshit from critics, but that was kind of like the that's what I'll give you that. That's definitely true. There's a little too much going on in this movie.
But
I
so
don't care.
I have a question. So Sandy marries this guy, they have a couple of kids, and so before that happens, Nicole, do they have real names in this movie? Do we just call them Sandy and Nicole? That's okay with me. But so before she gets married and meets this guy and whatever, Nicole, who's like way more of a free spirit, like, you know, Sandy's the practical one, Nicole's the free spirit. So she basically runs away from the house.
Sally and Jillian with a G.
Oh, right. She keeps calling her Jilly in the movie. I do remember that. But Sally, I didn't catch that. So Jilly runs
No, she's the
away.
main character.
Well, no one ever says the main character's name.
No, they do, like several times, but that's fine.
Whatever. So Jilly runs away to be free, and she's, dare I say, slutty. Like that's what she runs away to do, basically, is just like get with a bunch of different men and like party and stuff, is what it seems like,
Yeah,
right?
but also, I mean, this is set in like a really small New England town that's very insular, and they are segregated from the rest of the town and ostracized by the rest of the town. So, like, it would make sense that she would want to get the hell out of there, regardless of what she plans to do once she gets out.
But so they kind of like Do they write letters back and forth to each other, or are we just meant to believe that they're, like, witch psychic talking to each other?
No, they write letters.
I couldn't tell. Were other... I couldn't tell. Maybe I missed something.
No, I don't think you did. I think it's, like, you're just, put, like, because you hear voiceover a few times kind of back and forth. And then later in the movie, a letter becomes a kind of a plot point.
Yeah, I was also confused about that, but we can talk about that in a second. But, so she's writing, Sally is writing Gilly a letter. Gilly? Is it Gilly or Gilly?
Gilly.
It's Gilly, right? Okay. Yeah. She's writing her a letter, and she's, like, telling her whole life story that just happened, and she's like, I miss it. It seems like she hasn't written her a letter in a long time.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem weird that, like, because... I mean, until she meets Sally's daughters, it kind of seems like she hasn't been back since she left.
Right. But so, in one of the letters, Sally is like, I met this man, and we've been married for 2 years, and we have these beautiful kids.
Yeah, that seemed a little weird.
The kids are like 9 years old.
Yeah.
What is she talking about? They've been married for 2 years.
You can have children before you get married. I know plenty of people that have done that.
But that's not... Whatever. I had... It felt like to me like there were some time problems.
There were some time problems, yeah.
Okay. I feel like I'm going to talk about all the parts that I didn't like, just so we can get to the parts that I liked. Because I did like a lot of parts of it. That is totally fine.
There's so many good parts.
Okay, so Sandy's married, and her husband dies. I didn't like the beetle thing either.
Yeah.
It was just,
so there's, like, a clicking death beetle that is part of this whole family legend, that whenever these women in the family hear this, like, clicking of the death beetle, which is a thing, like, historically... There's also, like, several other bugs that are associated with this sort of thing, so it doesn't actually mean anything, but in the story, they hear the bug, and then they know that their lover's death is nigh.
Right, so the beetle comes, her husband gets, you think that he's gonna get hit by a bunch of bikers? It was a real fake out. It was a real fake out.
Yeah, it's pretty intense.
He's like, he's a delivery man? What do you think his job is?
He's like, you know how, like, on Gilmore Girls...
I didn't watch Gilmore Girls.
Okay. Well, Melissa McCarthy's character is, like, a chef, and she winds up marrying this guy who's always delivering them vegetables. I don't know. I think he's, like, that guy.
Okay, so he walks... Kind of is, like, though. Basically, what we know about his job is that he walks in the street with a cart of fruits and vegetables.
Yeah, that's really literally all that we know about him.
And yeah, I mean, I was gonna say, like, they in this movie they tend not to go very in depth about the male characters, like, at all. Yeah. Like, we actually don't know this guy. That's the most that we know about him.
Yeah, I mean, the movie definitely does not pass the Bechdel test, but it also
so funny, it really doesn't.
But it also, like, doesn't flesh out the male characters at all. They're just, like, no. These superficial, you know.
Which is super interesting to be, like, yeah. We have all these women and then to still do such a poor job in some ways. Not in all the ways.
No, I like it. I like that the male characters are so superficial and are really just there to serve the story. It's a nice reversal is all I'm saying.
So then... Oh, right, so there's a real fake-out. There's, like, 100 bicyclers coming, and we know he's gonna die. We don't know how. And so, like, all these bicycles come at him. He's, like, trapped in the middle of the street. Because he's so nice, he stopped to talk to somebody. And, But he, like, squeezes, and all the bikes go around him. And you're like, whew, he made it. Yeah, and then he gets hit by a truck instantly.
Yeah, that's...
Which, like, there was no emotion around his death.
For who? As a viewer?
Yeah, for me as a viewer, and then, like, I feel like eventually I got around to feeling a little bit sad with Sandy/Sally, but, like, at first, like, she, not that she wasn't upset, but she wasn't, like, crying or, like, distraught or, like, she just, like, went to yell at her aunts.
Yeah, about casting that love spell on her.
No, that's not. She went to yell at them about the curse, didn't she? She was like, you have to bring him back. And that's when they told her that it was a love spell. She didn't know.
Oh. Huh. I don't know.
She didn't even know it was a love spell until...
Well, she's... So, when people die, people get irrational.
No,
and, like,
sure.
You don't always have, like, the most... appropriate reaction.
Yeah, no, I don't want to judge somebody's.
But another thing that happens at the beginning of the film when Sally is still a little girl is that she casts this anti-love spell. She cooks up this idea of, like, the perfect guy, and she makes it impossible for this guy to exist so that, wait, I wrote it down because the line is absolutely heartbreaking. The guy she dreamed of doesn't exist. So if he doesn't exist, I can't die of a broken heart.
Yeah.
So sad.
Why?
So she's, like, pissed because she finally fell in love and now this fucking guy died. And then it turns out that the whole reason that she fell in love in the first place is because her aunt cast a stupid spell.
But then she, like, really, like, the reason why he did, God, this is so much plot. We're, like, not even talking about the movie yet. Like, barely. So the reason that he died is because she actually fell in love with him. Like, right. It wasn't just the spell. And the aunt's excuses, they were like, well, we didn't think you would actually fall in love with him. Like, that was their excuse for setting the spell, even though they knew that this curse existed. Whatever, that's shitty. Why couldn't they, if they're such powerful witches, all of them, why couldn't they figure out how to break the curse? Like, they can do everything else.
Yeah. Well, because then we wouldn't have this convoluted story.
I know. But, like, if you're going to, like, build this world and have this convoluted story, you might as well give a reason why they can't figure out how to break the curse.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, there's actually literally no reason that this whole curse plot line needs to be in there. Like,
it's true.
Because the main plot line is actually about, like, Nicole Kidman's character in this abusive relationship and, like, trying to escape from her abuser. And, like, we don't actually need the other plot about
and
stuff.
Sandy still could have... Yeah, the whole rest of the movie could have been the same. Except they wouldn't have lived with the aunts, I guess?
Yeah, I guess. Maybe. Their parents could have died some other way. But,
yeah.
It does serve the story in that all of these people in town, you know, say all of these, like, things about them, and there are all these rumors. Oh. And it helps that there is a rumor that all of the men... that they know will die.
Yeah.
You know.
That was the first time that I cried was when Sally and Jilly were young and they first went to live with the aunts and all the kids were yelling, witch, you're a bitch at them.
Yeah.
Like, that was so sad. Yeah. So mean.
It's been going on for hundreds of years.
But I have a question. Like, they live... So, Sandy lives in the same town that she grew up in, right?
Yep.
And so, and has all these women who are her peers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, doesn't that mean those are the same kids who were yelling, witch, you're a bitch, at her when she was younger?
Yeah, probably.
That's so horrible. But they're all friendly now. Even though everyone...
Not. What are you talking about? They're not friendly at all.
But then why do they all show up at the end of the movie for each other?
It's like that lady says, you know, I've always wanted to see inside your house.
Yeah, but like what? They all hate her and think she's a witch and they call her witch, you're a bitch. And then they just turn around fast like that?
People are animals. But I think it's more like that lady who's like, you know, I've always wanted to see inside your house. Like, she's clearly like the ringleader of the mean girls, you know. And like when you grow up, you're not as into being a mean, hopefully... as into being a mean girl, but, like, there's still clearly, like, this cliquey thing going on in the town, and I think the other women aren't necessarily as, like, full of venom for them as that one woman is. Like, the other ones seem like they are genuinely like, oh no, I want to help. And then the other lady is just like, no, I just wanted to see inside your house, you know, and she's the ringleader. So I don't know. I don't trust any of them.
But that like makes that last scene like really sucky because it's so powerful if you think, we already skipped to the end of the movie, whatever. At the end of the movie, so long story short, Nicole Kidman's boyfriend is
ex-boyfriend
cuckoo bananas crazy and like beating her and like really scary, and she's like, Sally, I need help, come help me. So Sandy,
that part I think is telepathic.
Okay. Well, she called her on the telephone.
Oh, did she? I don't remember that. Okay.
she called her on the telephone, except both one of the aunts and Sandy were running to the phone going like, it's Jilly, and they're like, I know, like they knew it was her and they knew something was wrong. Okay. So but they had to call it on the telephone.
Right.
He basically then kidnaps the two sisters while they're trying to get away from him.
And with any abusive relationship, when the person who is being abused tries to leave, it is the absolute most dangerous time, and that's usually when people wind up dead. So it's actually pretty true. Like, this is one of the aspects of the movie that I think actually is pretty realistic, that like they're about to get away and he winds up like kidnapping both of them. And
well, she goes back for something too, like they could have gotten away, and then she was like, no wait, I need my
some sort of amulet.
But so yes, then he kidnaps them and they poison him, and they don't
accidentally
they don't accidentally poison him. But they only mean to give him enough poison so that he gets, like, knocked out and they can escape. But she accidentally gives him too much. And so he dies. Oops. And then, you know, they're, like, freaking out because, you know, Sandy's like, my kids, I can't, they're going to take me away from my kids if they find out that I did this. So because they're witches, they try to bring him back to life. Question mark? Is that what happens?
Yeah. Well, Sandy's not thrilled about that idea because she wanted to bring her husband back to life after he died, and the aunts told her that if he came back, it wouldn't be him, it would be his body, but inhabited by something much darker. And Nicole Kidman's all like, who fucking cares? Obviously, this guy was like super dark to begin with. Like, we just need to like bring him back and like send him on his way. And so they do this spell, and I'm not sure if he maybe like wasn't entirely dead and the spell like kind of brought him back, or if the spell really actually did bring him back, because before they're able to like pierce his eyeball, which is so gross, to like complete the spell, he wakes up. So who knows? That part's a little unclear.
But even when they're, like, done, he's not, like, he's still, like, some kind of, like, spirit that's not dead, but also not really alive? Does that seem right?
Before or after she hits him with a frying pan? It was a frying pan, right?
Oh, like, I kind of forgot about that.
He sits up and, like, starts, and, like, assaults Nicole Kidman again. And is, like, strangling her, which is, like, very uncomfortable to watch. And then, like, Sandy grabs a frying pan or something and hits him in the head. And then he's definitely dead.
But he's not dead, because his spirit is still haunting them after that.
He's dead, but his spirit is haunting. So, like, his physical body is dead.
So he's not... Right. So he's still haunting them. But they
bury him in the backyard.
And they go back to the aunt's house, and then this cop, is he a cop?
I think he might be a U.S. Marshal, actually. Like, that's what his badge looked like, but I don't know, some sort of law enforcement officer.
Right, shows up at their door, and he's looking for the guy. What was the guy's name, the bad guy?
I don't know.
He had it was a good name.
Jimmy Angelov.
Angelov, right. They kept, like, they said his last name a lot.
Right.
So here's where I have another problem. Like, this law enforcement guy shows up. He basically knows that these sisters killed this guy. Like, he knows, right?
I think when he shows up, he's like, they know where he is. He's not sure that they killed him. And then he starts to suspect it. And then he goes and talks to everyone in the town. And they're like, yeah, no, they probably definitely killed him. And you know what else? On Halloween, they jump off the roof and fly. And then he's like, okay, well, that's clearly not true. You know, so he's like kind of vacillating back and forth.
But so he like, he seems so like not. He seems so wishy-washy about, like there's a certain point where he definitely, like, pretty much knows that they did it. And yeah, he's just trying to get them to confess, basically. But, like, it's like he's flirting with her and, like, playing a game at the same time. He doesn't seem super invested, actually, in catching this murderer, even though it's his job and that's why he came there.
Yeah, well, I think, like, if he's dead, then it, like, kind of doesn't matter. You know, he's concerned with, like, getting this clearly very dangerous and homicidal man off the streets, and if somebody else did that for him, well,
That was not my read on it, like, at all. I just was like, why is he acting like this? I don't get it.
I mean, he's definitely very inappropriate with Sandra Bullock, like, from the get-go. Excuse me, sir, boundaries. But spoiler alert, it turns out that he's the guy that Sally cast that love spell about when she was a little girl. He's got two different colored eyes, something about a star, which his badge has.
Oh, is that why? Okay, yeah. There was a part where the demon Jimmy was, like, attacking them in their house. Mm-hmm. And he shows up. Maybe he was already there. I don't know. Why was he eating pancakes with them?
He had said, I'll come by tomorrow around 10 so we can talk about this more, or something like that. And then when he showed up, the whole family was making pancakes.
But the little girls were like, you have to come eat pancakes with us. And he was like, okay. And he was like,
because they were going to cast another spell on him to send him away.
Oh, yeah, right? I remember that. They dumped out the maple syrup, but then, whatever. Okay, back to what I was going to ask before. Is that why there was, like, this, the Jimmy was in the house, like, being scary, and he, like, waved around his badge, and that's what made Jimmy go away?
That was weird.
Was that the star? Like, is that why that worked?
I don't know. I think that part's a little loose. Because the star functions like a crossword with a vampire, which is weird.
But it was just a badge. It was just like his work badge. I thought that was weird.
It was. I mean, I'm not saying that this movie is perfect.
That's also a really lame man thing that happened. Like, he had to save them from him in that moment.
In that moment, but like, only they ultimately save themselves.
Yeah, they do.
Because, yeah.
Okay, yeah. We're near the end of the movie, and Jimmy Demon guy is like, basically, like, has possessed Nicole Kidman.
Yeah.
And is trying to, like, take her away.
Oh my,
like,
god.
What?
You know what? We'll talk about it after. We missed the tequila scene.
Oh, yeah.
But keep talking about what you were going to talk about. We can revisit that because that's one of my favorite scenes. So okay. We can talk about the good things once you're done talking about the bad things.
All right. Well, what I'm about to say is good and bad. I have, like, good things, and then I have things that I'm like, ugh, really? So she's, like, possessed by this guy. And it's, like, really scary and, like, really painful to watch because he's, like, killing her body, basically, and she has no control or whatever. So they call all the ladies to the house because they need a lot of ladies to do the spell that they're going to do. They need 12 ladies, I believe.
They can have 8, but 12.
But 12 is better, yeah. So they all get... they each get a broom.
Except one lady doesn't have a broom, so she brought her dust buster.
Right.
I love that.
And they gather around in a circle and hold brooms and chant, and it doesn't work really. And then how does it work in the end? I don't even remember.
It works eventually.
Oh, all right.
And they basically, like, they draw the spirit out of her. Or no, he's, like, still inside of her. I don't know. I don't remember, actually. The details about this are a little fuzzy.
But me too. I don't know why. Like, there were some parts that, like, I legit wasn't
so wrapped
paying.
Up in the spirit of sisterhood and...
Yeah, well, no, because that's the part where, like they kind of give up for a second, and and Sandy lays down next to Nicole, and it's, like, really nice the way that, like, you know, it's, like, you really, like, I don't know, it's a sister bond. And she's
and then
just
they,
like, no, you can't leave.
Cut their palms and put them together again, which is something that they do at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. And then they win.
And then they hug.
And then the ladies sweep up with their brooms.
Because, like, they draw the spirit out of her and, like, vanquish him, and then he turns to dust, and they have to clean house.
I just, like, that was the part that I was like, ugh, this is stupid. Like women doing housework. I don't know. I didn't love that they had brooms, and then I didn't love that they used the brooms to sweep up afterwards. That wasn't my favorite.
Yeah. No, I could see how you'd feel that way.
But I thought it was really powerful when they all came together.
Yeah, it was.
And really powerful that, like, sister love is what, like, basically saves her in the end.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you want to talk about the tequila scene?
Yes, the tequila scene. I love this one so much.
It, like, got... The scene was, like, intense in a way that, like, didn't match the rest of the movie.
Well...
I also love this scene.
Yeah, I'd say there's, like, tonal inconsistencies throughout the movie, and this happens to be one of them. But I like it because there's, like, a real arc that happens, you know, like, that tequila song is on, and they come downstairs, and they're like, oh my god, the ants are making margaritas! And, they are dancing, and the ants use their magic to turn the blender on, which is hilarious. The ants are hilarious. I mean, I could have a whole movie about
them. They should have their own movie. It's true.
I absolutely agree. Yeah. Or, like, a series.
Yeah. There should be a series where, because at the beginning of the movie, this woman comes over and pays them a bunch of money to, like, do a love spell, so this guy will love her, and, like I would watch that series. If it was, like, a 30-minute series, and, like, they had to solve someone's problem every week, I'd watch that.
Well, historically, like, witchcraft has been, on the one hand, it has been a vehicle to drive women, independent women out of society, but also, like, has been a trade for women for thousands of years, you know, like, prior to modern medicine and, you know, all sorts of stuff. Like, people would have to go to witches and yada yada. So, yeah, I think if they were running, like, a little small business where they do practical magic for people and cast spells and... do weird things with pigeons, I would still watch that. But anyway, what was I gonna say?
Oh, you're gonna talk about tequila.
So they're all dancing and they're singing and they're doing shots and they're singing some more, and they're all, like, all four of them are just having the best time and bonding. And then they're sitting around the kitchen table, and I forget who does it first, but somebody says something like really really mean about the other one.
Yep.
And then kind of they all start saying mean shit and cackling, and like the tone really changes, and then it changes, and then they start singing this weird song, and the tone really shifts again suddenly to where they're like, what is this song? Why are we singing it? Oh my god, this is a Jimmy song. Hey, wait a minute, where'd this bottle of tequila come from? Somebody left it on the porch? Oh no! It's like the brand of tequila that Jimmy drank. And so she like smashes the bottle, and like it's a total buzzkill. But it's like the first, it's the first indication that like something's wrong, and that like he's still around, even though they buried him in the backyard.
I maybe made up a plot during that scene.
Or I might have left something out.
No, I just like, because she dumped out the bottle so fast, like, I knew it was Jimmy that left the bottle, but I thought maybe he, like, made it so that the tequila made them... I thought he, like, used some kind of magic or something.
Some sort of magic to make them, like, extra fucked up?
Yeah, yeah, to make them, like,
tell margaritas the, and... what appears to be several rounds of shots of straight tequila.
They just, even after things escalated out of control, they kept doing shots. And I was like, no, yeah. Stop, please stop, please stop. I don't like this.
You're going to have a really rough morning tomorrow.
I thought maybe he put something in it that made them all tell the truth.
No. No, I think he, like, a little bit of him was kind of, like, possessing all of them in that moment.
Yeah, it was something like that, right?
Yeah.
All right. I wasn't totally off.
Yeah. But that was, like, one of the scenes that I was like, oh, right, this movie is a lot darker than I remembered
but
it being.
But, like, it also feels like that scene is, like, powerful and scary because yeah. That is how people get when they drink. Like, I feel like emotions can, like, vary so wildly, so quickly.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, you accidentally say a bunch of true stuff sometimes. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, like, even though, like, it's, like, the tone of it keeps shifting in, like, a weird way, I think that the, like, emotional intensity of the scene, I think it works. I actually think it works really well. I just didn't remember it ending in the way that it did. I was just like, yeah, margaritas, having fun with the ants, drinking tequila, dancing, doing witch stuff. And then, you know, the rest of it happens.
Oh, yeah, it's like so dark. But I think that they all needed to say those things to each other anyway.
Yeah, probably. Maybe. I don't remember what they actually said, but...
Well, they definitely called Nicole Kidman a slut. And oh, yeah. I feel like they called Sandra Bullock, like, uptight or, like, something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't remember either.
Yeah. Pretty much all that I remember, like, even though I loved this movie, pretty much all that I remembered was the first half of that scene. And
from the whole movie? That's all you remembered?
Well, and I also remembered that, like, Sally has a great little... like, botanical shop.
Those are funny things to be the things that
I know,
remember.
Really weird details. I, like, aesthetically remembered a lot of things, but other than that, and, like, the scene with the broomsticks, like, the coven kind of scene.
When was the last time that you saw this before now?
It's probably been at least 10 years.
But you, like, you watched it a bunch, like, growing up?
Yeah, I think, maybe not, like, a bunch, but I definitely saw it multiple times, and I remembered really liking it. And, of course, Sandra Bullock is amazing in this, as always.
Well,
she's the greatest.
They all are. I mean,
yeah,
like,
they
that's
are.
The thing is, like, I don't love this movie, but, like, I mean, this is what I always end up saying about Sandra Bullock in particular, is, like, there's just nothing not to like about her. Like, you just can't, like... If you asked me if I like her, I would be like, no, not really. But also, I can't find anything that I don't like. But I also feel that way about, like, Nicole Kidman. I feel that way about, like, most of the women in this movie.
Well, something that we've said about Sandra Bullock before is that she's the best part of a lot of bad movies.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily feel like that's true about this movie, because they're all so good. Or at least all the women are. The guys, they could take them or leave them. But,
yeah.
This, even though it came out before Eyes Wide Shut was filmed afterwards, and so Nicole Kidman was, like, fresh off of working on that movie when they filmed this one. And apparently, she got used to doing, like, 70 or 80 takes of each scene from working with Stanley Kubrick. So the director on Practical Magic had a hard time balancing that with Sandra Bullock, who could, like, nail it in 3 or 4 takes. So I imagine that must have been really annoying to do.
Yeah.
What did you think about the digital effects in this? There were some, like, pretty interesting visual effects.
They weren't great, but also, like, what year was this?
1998.
They were really terrible. Good. They were really good for 1998, I thought. Yeah. Like, I didn't watch them and go, like, like, I didn't laugh out loud at them.
The only one that I was, like, ugh at was the one where Nicole Kidman is, like, driving across the country, I guess. And so she's, like, driving for several days after Sally's husband has died. And so you see, like, day turns to night, turns to day, turns to night. That was pretty rough. But other than that, I thought they were pretty good for 1998.
Yeah, I've definitely seen worse.
Yeah. Oh, fun fact about those death beetles. They do that ticking noise to attract a mate and can be heard in the rafters of old buildings on quiet summer nights. So they are therefore associated with quiet, sleepless nights and are named for the vigil kept beside the dying or dead. And by extension, the superstitious have seen the Death Watch beetle as an omen of impending death. So,
wait, so they're really called... Is a Death Watch beetle a real thing?
Yeah.
That's really what they're called? Oh, yep. They're scary. I just Googled it. I don't want... I can see it up close now. Just like...
I think there's, like, a few, if I remember the Wikipedia article correctly... There are actually, the term death watch has been applied to a variety of other ticking insects, including Anobium striatum, some of the so-called book lice of the family Sosidae, and appropriately named Atropos divinatoria and Clothilla pulsatoria. So there's some other bugs that are also called death watch. I don't know, I think they're kind of cool. They have, like, this, like, brown shell with, like, gold-ish modeling on it.
That's definitely not what they looked like in the movie, though.
No, it was a black bug. Yeah, it was definitely a different kind of bug.
Welcome to Bug Talk.
Welcome to Bug Talk with Jordan and Carol. We're here to talk about bugs.
We're here to Google bugs. We don't know anything about bugs, but the internet does.
Today's bug, the Death Watch beetle. Zestobium rufovillosum. This is just a podcast where I say things in other languages now.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, last time you worked really hard on your German, like, and it's impressive, like, I couldn't say the things that you're saying right now.
Well, dusting off my Latin skills. I think I mentioned in the Wishbone episode that I took several years of Latin. So that helps when I'm trying to pronounce things from Wikipedia articles. I thought I would have more to say about this movie. I just really love it.
You could say that for, oh no, you know what? We made it to an hour.
I actually was surprised by how much I still enjoyed this when I watched it. Considering how much darker I remembered it being, I was like, but it's still so good! Even though it's not. I think we've pointed out all of the ways in which it's not actually that great, but...
It's fine, though. Like, there's a lot of worse things that you could watch.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I, if I might say so, both Sandy and Nicole are looking particularly fine in this one.
Yeah. Yeah, they look great.
And so do Diane Wiest and Stockard Channing. I mean,
they do.
Wow, that Stockard Channing in this movie is pretty much exactly my, like, style plan for when I become an older woman.
Well, they
pull
both
off that kind of stuff.
They both walked around this town dressed like crazy. Like, not.
Yeah, love it.
Yeah, I also loved it, but they were like, they were really calling attention to themselves. That's all.
Yeah. I think they just don't give a fuck because they're like, whatever. People are going to think what they're going to think, and we're just going to, like, do us and wear ridiculous hats and weird little gloves and just really lean in to the, like, weird witchy aunt thing.
They did, yeah.
This is supposed to have taken place in New England, a little town in New England, but actually it was filmed in Washington on, like, Washington State on a little island called Whidbey Island, which a friend of mine grew up on, and I was like, oh my god, do you have any inside scoop about the filming of Practical Magic on Whidbey in 1998? And she did not. So, that was unfortunate.
Yeah.
I'm excited about Halloween, though. Oh my god, the end of the movie on Halloween. It turns out they really do jump off their roofs and fly.
I missed that part.
You did? Oh my god, it's so funny. Because they're all dressed up in, like, black dresses with, like, witch hats and, like, umbrellas, and they go up to the top, to the roof of their house, and the whole town is there to watch, and they hold hands, and they all jump off the roof and, like, gracefully float down to the ground while laughing.
I don't know how I missed that. That does sound great.
I mean, I would say Google it right now. I'm sure there's a clip of it on YouTube.
All right.
Because it's crazier than it sounds.
Well, I guess, I don't remember the end of this movie. were Sandy and that guy really in love?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, right. So.
There's too many plots.
Yeah. Somehow he, I don't know, somebody somewhere finds, like, in something that is burned down, find, like, identifying pieces of things that they identify a body as the evil Jimmy guy.
Oh, right,
like,
yeah.
Okay, case closed, even though obviously he's buried in their backyard. And so he's like, okay, my work here is done. I'm going to go back to Arizona. He goes back to Arizona. And then somehow, for some reason, he winds up coming back. And they live happily ever after. Oh, because also, in the coven scene where they, like, banish Jimmy, the power of sisterly love also reverses the curse, gets rid of the curse, I guess.
Oh, right. Whatever. Yeah.
So that's how it ends.
All right, I'm watching them jump off the roof. Ooh, they have, like, Wicked Witch socks on, too.
Yeah.
Like, those striped socks. All right, they're jumping down.
Yeah,
they're
it's
floating,
like,
and they landed. And they're celebrating. Oh, no worries.
Oh, yes. Also, small role for Margot Martindale in this as one of Sally's two employees in this very small shop in this very small town. It seems weird that she would employ that many people, but whatever. Yeah, her and her coworker are also some really great comic relief in this movie.
Yeah, I liked the other coworker too.
Yeah. Who, for some reason, has crimped hair, even though it's 1998.
That was still, like, kind of a thing. But not was a big it? Thing. Well, I feel like it was a thing if you were, like, in middle school in 1998.
But even still, I feel like you would crimp, like, part of your hair, but not the whole thing, and this lady did the whole thing. But she's goth, so it doesn't matter. She gets to do whatever she wants.
Right. Anything else that we missed?
No, I'm just clicking through some photos from the premiere, and it's a real who's who
of
who was famous in 1998. We got Jenna Elfman of Dharma and Greg
Where
fame.
Where is Jenna Elfman now?
I think she has a series or just had a series last year.
Who played Greg?
I don't know. He did not have the staying power that she has. Yeah, she has a show called Imaginary Mary, which has something to do with an imaginary friend. I don't remember exactly.
Oh, it's canceled, though.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Yeah, Winona Ryder was there. Rosanna Arquette. Matthew McConaughey. Looking all Matthew McConaughey. Leanne Rimes.
Oh, man.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. The, like, theme song to this movie is This Kiss by Faith Hill.
Ugh, that's what was playing when she first, like, ran to the guy and it made no sense.
Yeah.
Ugh. That's when I was like there were, like, certain parts of this music, of this movie that, like, felt like continuous music videos, and then there were, like, other parts that had no music at all.
Yeah. And I read on the IMDb trivia, let me pull that up real quick, because this is related.
What?
Oh, wait. Something just occurred to me that... Okay, so this was directed by Griffin Dunne, first-time director, but he is an actor, and I think the father or brother of Dominique Dunne. He plays the husband in I Love Dick. Did you watch that yet? Have you seen that?
No, because it's on Amazon, and I don't... It's, like, the one thing I don't pay for.
Ah.
I've heard really good things about that, though.
It is really good. But I was like... Because I had looked at his... like, his Wikipedia page, I don't know. I was like, oh, he looks familiar, but I can't figure out what he was in. And it just occurred to me. It is. It's very good. After bad reactions at a test screening, composer Michael Nyman's score was rejected at the last minute. It was called too European-sounding and obtrusive. It was replaced with one by Alan Silvestri. The change was made so late that the soundtrack albums had already been pressed, and as a result, the first batch to hit stores all had two suites of themes from Nyman's score. A few weeks later, a new version of the CD with the exact same ISBN number was made, replacing Nyman's tracks with music by Silvestri. You know, I bet those original ones are worth lots of money.
Yeah, right.
I think that the music... I mean, you were talking about more, like, just, like, the general action and pacing and plot being, like, a music video, but I think the music in general seems a little off because it wasn't really, like, supposed to be there, necessarily.
That makes sense.
Yeah. But they did play a Stevie Nicks song for the end credits, which is perfect and appropriate.
Wasn't there also a Stevie Nicks song in the middle somewhere?
No, there's a Joni Mitchell song in the
middle. Oh, you're right. That's what I'm thinking
of. When she's driving in the car. Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. So I actually really like the soundtrack to this. Ooh, taglines. There's a little witch in every woman. I don't love that.
No.
Prepare to come under their spell. I don't love that one either. For two sisters from a family of witches, falling in love is the trickiest spell of all.
That's too long and not clever.
But it's the most appropriate of those three.
Sure, yeah. It describes the movie well, I guess. I don't know. If you had to pick one of the plots from this movie, what is this movie actually about? Like, what do you want it to be about?
I mean... I think the domestic violence plotline, because it's important, and it's... I think they really... If they had, like, just stuck with that and fleshed that out a bit, I think that, like, the possession aspect of this could have been used as a good kind of allegory for, like, what happens to people when they're in abusive relationships. But they kind of dropped the ball on that, so...
Yeah.
It opened at number one when it came out, but it did not make back the amount of money that it cost to make. overall. It was about a $48 million budget and only made about, like, 46 something. That sucks.
Yeah, especially if it opened at number one.
Yeah. Well, I think that's about all I have. You have anything?
Nope.
Well, it's too bad you didn't enjoy it more.
No, I liked it. Great. I don't want anyone to think that I didn't like it. I just didn't love it.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot. I was going to write a game or something, and I forgot. But if you could do magic or have magical powers, what would you do / what would they be?
I would fly. No question.
Why?
Because I've spent literally my whole life trying to fly, and I can't yet, so...
Oh, right. I forgot. For our listeners who might not know, Jordan is a literal acrobat.
Yeah, it's like my number one dream. Like, the best moment of every day is when, for like 1 second, I jump really high on the trampoline, and for one part of 1 second, I'm like, I flew! I floated! I did it!
Yeah, that's awesome. I think my magical power would be to pause time so I can take a nap. Or, like, do other things. But mostly just so I could, like, get the sleep I need and still be on the same... Have, like, the same amount of time for things as other people.
Well, so you would basically, like, you would be able to make more time.
No, I think freeze time. Because I just want everything to just stop for a minute so I could just take a nap, you know? Instead of, like, creating more time.
Right.
Because if there's more time, you feel the need to, like, fill more time, right?
Right, yeah, so, yeah. But you would just really fill it with naps.
Yeah. But I'd feel bad about it. I'd be like, oh, I have all this, so much more time that I could use to be doing things. I mean, and not just for the naps. I think that, like, if you could freeze time and, like, do things. Like, there's that Rick and Morty episode where they freeze time.
It's one of the best ones. I love that one.
There's so much, like,
they freeze time because they had a party that they need to clean up after.
Yeah.
And then they just leave time frozen.
Yeah. I think that would be really helpful.
Yeah.
I think it would be, like, getting to be in the mall, like, overnight. You know, like, if you could, like, freeze time and, like, explore the world while everyone is just, like, frozen in place.
Oh yeah, I mean, I do really like it's kind of like, it's like there are times of the day that are a little bit like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like before anyone is around much.
Oh yeah, I'm never awake that early.
Oh, I am.
But I have been a few times in my life.
Well, like,
usually
really,
it's because I'm, like, still awake from the night before because of work, but...
Yeah. Yeah, well, I was going to say, like, really late at night is kind of the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Except you have to be all quiet because you don't want to wake anyone up.
Mm-hmm.
But if time were frozen, be as loud as you wanted.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that does it for Practical Magic. This is the first in our Halloween series. Ooh! Even though this isn't a super Halloween-y movie, it is Halloween at the end, so I classify it as a Halloween movie. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another Halloween movie. So thank you for listening to Wistful Thinking. You can find us and more movie and nostalgia podcasts from the Cage Club Podcast Network at cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me. I'm Kara Gale O'Regan with Jordan Pullen Clark, and this was us talking about practical magic. Talk to you then.
Bye. So come on right now, it's time for you to get up and out of his house.
say